Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, where we do our best to help leaders go further, faster.
On today's podcast, we'll begin a two-part conversation on creating a culture of collaboration. Well, Andy, as we kick off 2018 on the podcast, I really can't think of a better topic than collaboration.
I agree. I think this is a great topic as we kick off a new year. The idea of collaboration or cooperation is so important because in most of our organizations, we are siloed, even though we work against that. That's just a tension that's always going to be there for us to manage. And it's easy for all of us to get focused on our own agenda, our own success, and forget or lose sight of the fact that collaboration and cooperation really is, in some ways, the oil of the machinery that keeps the organization moving forward.
And Andy, as we've discussed many times on the podcast, creating a culture of anything organizationally is challenging.
Absolutely. It requires some intentionality. If you leave a culture alone, the culture doesn't go away. It just changes. Every organization has a culture. Whether or not it's healthy depends on how intentional we've been. So yeah, to create a culture of anything organizationally, you've got to name it. We've talked about this. You've got to name it, wear it, brand it, teach it, and institutionalize it. And so when we think about creating a culture of collaboration or of cooperation, those same principles apply.
Well, Andy, when you've taught our staff about creating a culture of cooperation, you've used a Patrick Lencioni quote from his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Here's the quote. The ultimate dysfunction of a team is the tendency of members to care about something other than the collective goals of the group. And then he goes on to say that team status and individual status are the prime candidates.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And all of us, whether we thought of it in those terms or not, have experienced it. Because when I show up at work, my primary concern, number one, is me. Mm-hmm. Then number two, it's my specific team or my division or my department or my business unit. And then number three is, you know, the organization in general. So left to our own, the organization comes in third place. So again, to create a culture that is organizationally focused rather than me focused or even my department, my team or my staff focused, again, requires some intentionality. But at the end of the day, where there's a culture of collaboration, the entire organization wins, which means my department wins, which means I win. So if we can flip this over and get people to understand the importance of this and to kind of pull out of their personal focus, even their team or division focus, and to think globally in terms of the whole organization, you know, everybody wins. So unless there's some serious vision casting and dot connecting at the top, the organization as a whole sits in third place. Unless, of course, we're talking about a really small organization. And in that case, it's a bit easier because interdependence is seen and felt daily. But in a complex organization, the organization is naturally going to come in third place.
Andy, I heard you recently talk to a small group of leaders about how this idea of individual status and how it negatively impacts cooperation, especially as it applies to personal fame.
Yeah, this was a group, the people in the group either were or certainly had the potential to become well known in their fields. And the reason I talked about it is because personal fame creates an unhealthy, I call it gravitational pull toward the Pied Piper, the Rainmaker, the charismatic leader, the founder, whoever it might be. And the extra attention creates a culture really of entitlement around an individual, which of course pulls the front end of the organization out of alignment. So leaders have to be really intentional about fending this off. If they don't, their organizations will suffer, and before long everybody's running around trying to figure out what would make the boss happy rather than what makes the company successful and what helps the company thrive. And those two purposes are often at odds. So I spent a few minutes with these men and women saying, you need to understand this is a natural tension that's never going to go away. In other words, what's best for you personally may not be what's best for the organization. And if you opt for what's best for you, you are going to undermine collaboration and you're going to undermine, ultimately, productivity. And of course, when a leader begins to leverage the organization for their own personal individual ends, the end is nearer than it was the day before. I really feel like they've lit a fuse. You know, the clock is ticking backwards because, again, what's good for the individual is rarely what's best for the organization. So I ask leaders in our field, you know, in ministry, you know, are you there to create a great organization or are you using the organization to create a name for yourself? Mm-hmm. And whenever I ask this question to a group, there's a murmur. You know, I see heads go down and pens start moving or thumbs start tapping and I have no idea what they're writing. But there's, you know, there's this moment where we're caught off guard where I'm, you know, here I am looking in the mirror going, yeah, that's a good question. Am I here for me and I'm using the organization or am I here for the organization? And again, for ambitious leaders, for gifted leaders, this is a a tension that is never going away. There's no way to resolve that. But there is a way to manage it, and how we manage it impacts whether or not we develop a culture of collaboration, or we develop a culture that's really all about fulfilling some, you know, personal ambition. And as awkward as this is, I think those of us in leadership should acknowledge this, at least to ourselves. We should admit it. I mean, besides, the sharp people in our organization, they know. The sharp people in our organizations, they know if we are there for their benefit and for the benefit of the organization, or if we're leveraging the organization to make a name for ourselves. And while we're on this topic, I mean, we can't avoid this. Recently, as everybody listening knows, there have been several high-profile cases of high-profile leaders, you know, being forced out of their own organizations when it became public that, you know, the organization was covering for and paying, in some cases, hush money for their own personal bad behavior. Now, without knowing any of the details, here's what we do know. The men, and in these cases, it's you know, pretty much always men, the men who eventually lost their jobs were distracted from their jobs, to say the least. I mean, if you're covering, if you're hiding, if you're, you know, paying out settlements on the side, I mean, think of how distracted you are. Think about the sideways energy that creates, and think about how that impacts morale in a company. And whenever the leader is distracted, especially by something personal, the company is not going to be hitting on all cylinders. There's always sideways energy. And speaking of energy, the energy consumed covering up bad behavior at the top is enormous. And then, as we've seen, the energy and resources consumed to recover is enormous as well. But that's what happens when a leader prioritizes personal success ahead of organizational success, when they see employees as the supporting cast in the story of their success or fame. Now, this may seem a bit off topic when it comes to creating a culture of, you know, collaboration, but it's really not, because leaders create, steward, and embody the corporate culture, whether it's healthy or unhealthy. So if the leader's tone, the leader's posture, style, their behavior at work requires disproportionate energy and attention to keep him or her happy or between the rails morally or financially or whatever it might be, well, then come on. Cooperation and collaboration is virtually impossible, because a culture of cooperation assumes that everybody in the organization is in a position to lend themselves to everybody else in the organization. And a dysfunctional leader, especially at the top, or a leader who is consumed with, you know, keeping themselves out of trouble or making sure people don't discover certain things, it just sucks all the air out of the room. Because the truth is, a culture of cooperation assumes that everybody, especially the leadership at the top, it assumes that everybody in the organization is in a position to lend themselves to everybody else in the organization. And egotistical leaders are not capable of lending themselves to anybody. Consequently, eventually, nobody else is either.
Well, Andy, when I've heard you teach on creating a culture of cooperation, you organize the content around two statements and then one powerful question. I'd like to get you to comment on those. I'm here to facilitate your success, regardless of where our names are on the org chart. And then the second is, while our responsibilities differ, we are both essential to the success of the enterprise.
Yeah, when it comes to creating a culture of cooperation, the org chart is not necessarily our friend. In fact, when it comes to cooperation, there is no org chart. In an organization characterized by collaboration, everybody does what everybody needs to do in order to make sure that everybody else is successful. Now, this assumes a couple of things. It assumes that an organization has hired well, that it's organized well. In other words, it's organized around the mission and vision of the organization, which means that individual success actually equates to organizational success. So those are some pretty big assumptions. But assuming those things are true, then it's possible for a leader to create a culture of collaboration. Because if everybody is successful, think about this. If everybody is successful at what they were employed and hired to do, everybody wins. So when I help you succeed, I'm helping the company succeed, which in turn helps me succeed. And again, this works against what we said up front in this episode of the podcast, that I show up at work thinking first about me, second about my team, third about the company. And again, that's why creating a culture of collaboration flips that upside down, which on paper makes perfect sense. But, you know, when I show up at 8 o'clock in the morning or 8:30 in the morning, again, it's my natural tendency is to think about me, which again comes back to why leaders have to be intentional about creating this kind of culture.
Andy, I've heard you tell a story about how your dad actually modeled this for you when you were younger.
Yeah, years ago, I would go with my dad to work and work in shipping at the nonprofit where he's the CEO. And this is a multi-million dollar enterprise that does stuff really internationally. But during the week leading up to Christmas, it was an all hands on deck effort to ship product. So my dad would, you know, take off a suit, show up in his blue jeans and his, you know, button down shirt and take instructions from the shipping clerk, you know, packing boxes, loading boxes, labeling crates. And granted, it was somewhat symbolic, but it underscored this idea that his success depended on their success and vice versa. So whenever an organizational leader can dip down into the organization and model that, when people see people that they rarely see doing things that they don't normally do, that's a powerful reminder that, again, my success depends on yours and yours depends on mine. And it just underscores the power and the importance of this principle. In fact, anytime an organization has an all-hands-on-deck event, good things happen. The good things happen to morale. Good things happen relationally. And this is true even in the middle of a crisis, because most organizations, again, are so siloed, and there's just nothing you can do about that ultimately. So consequently, they don't see nor feel the interdependence within the organization. But when an event, whether it's a seasonal event, a planned event, or a response to a crisis happens, and people are all on the same level doing similar work, it is a beautiful thing. And it just underscores the importance of something that is true all the time. It's just difficult to see in an organizational environment. But Lane, this is a mindset. It has to become part of an organization's culture. And that's why this second statement is so necessary, that while our responsibilities differ, we are both essential to the success of the enterprise. And honestly, I think this is a little bit easier for me sometimes than other leaders because, like you, we remember when there were six of us and we drew a large organizational chart and we went back in and put our initials in every single box, that we were responsible for things that were going to max out our capabilities. And then over time, we worked ourselves out of those boxes. So you and I, we feel the interdependence of the different organizational roles in this organization. But for a person that walks into a medium-sized company or a large company, unless the leader is intentional about creating environments where they see that and feel that, it's just not going to happen. Again, because I show up at work thinking about me. Mm-hmm. Second, I think about my team. And third, if there's any margin at all, I think about the company in general.
And finally, Andy, you ask a question that I think fuels a culture of collaboration. And it's one we've talked about on the podcast before, but it really is a game changer.
And it is such a simple, but it is such a powerful question. I remember sitting with a leadership team of a large international company, and I've not had this opportunity many times, but on this particular occasion, they invited me to spend a day just listening in on their offsite discussion about this company. I was expecting to show up and there'd be 14 or 15 people. And I can't even begin to estimate how many people were in the room. I thought, wow, this is one heck of a meeting. There were so many people. And so at the end, the CEO said, my friend Andy's here, and I've asked him to make a few comments. And so I dispensed with what I was going to say and responded to what I had heard listening to them talk all day. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would like to introduce a question that is so simple, but may be the oil in the machinery of what you're dealing with right now. And when I gave them this question, it's so simple. Again, there was this sort of audible response in the room like, oh, yeah, if we would just do that, you know, it would solve some of these problems. It would ease some of this tension. And the question is simply this: what can I do to help? What can I do to help? This is the question that executives expect subordinates to ask them. But in an organization characterized by cooperation, this question has to go both ways. In fact, it is more powerful and it's certainly more meaningful when the person with the most influence and the most resources ask the folks who report to them, what can I do to help? Because the question carries this force. How can I best loan myself to you? How can I use my influence and my resources to help you do what I've asked you to do? Mm-hmm. Why? Because in a culture of collaboration, everybody is essential and everybody's success depends on everybody else's success. So the question is simple. It's what can I do to help? And when I slow down enough to ask that question, it does things relationally and corporately. And when the people around me slow down enough to ask that question, you know, amazing things happen. And as we've discussed before, there's really just one reason we don't ask it. It's because we're afraid they'll have an answer, which will require what? Think about it. Which will require my time, my resources, and my energy. And there's a, you know, I'm like everybody else that shows up at work. I want to reserve my resources, my time, and my energy for my stuff. Mm. I don't want to loan it to you. But when I loan it to you and you loan yours to me, the organization's better, we're better, and it's just a better place to work.
And while all of this helps create a posture of collaboration in our organization, you've actually gone a step further by giving our staff 6 practices that put collaboration into action.
Yes, and we're going to talk about those 6 practices next time right here on the Leadership Podcast.
That's great. Well, as we conclude this time, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to go back to something I addressed at the top. And again, we're going to talk about this a little bit more next time. And that's this. Leaders, entitlement begins somewhere. I just want you to think about that for a minute. Entitlement, whether you're the CEO or you head a division or business unit or part of the, you know, you lead a franchise within a larger company, entitlement always begins somewhere. And the question I think that all of us should ask is this: where does it generally begin for the person in our position, in our industry, or in our profession? Where does entitlement begin? And the reason this is important is because you are the only one who has the power to draw the line and say it stops here. And the reason this is a big deal as it relates to collaboration is that entitlement will lure us away from what's best for the organization. Remember, what's best for you may be at odds with what's best for the organization. And you will never, ever create a culture of cooperation and collaboration if you refuse to draw the line on personal entitlement.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for today. And to all of our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us. Don't forget to check out the andystanley.com website, where you can find the leadership application guide to go with today's podcast.